Next case for argument, United States versus Anderlich. Mr. Anderson.
May it please the court, I'm Kent Anderson with the Federal Public Defender's Office of the Central District of Illinois, representing appellant Michael Anderlich. In this case, Mr. Anderlich pled guilty to distributing 27.69 grams of powder cocaine to an informant. His plea hearing, he admitted 201 to 299 grams of relevant conduct. He ended up being sentenced to 57 months in prison based on the probation officer's finding that he or his roommate in some combination distributed 312.39 grams of powder and 1.02 grams of crack, and there was one gun that was connected to the drug offense. This sentence is unreasonable because it's far longer than necessary to deter someone like Mr. Anderlich, who was 43 years old at the time of sentencing and had never been sentenced to more than 60 days in county jail before. With respect to his age, the Sentencing Commission a couple years ago found that only 6.99% of people who are between ages 41 and 50 and criminal history category 1 recidivate. So a shorter sentence would be a sufficient deterrent.
What percentage?
6.99, roughly 7%. In addition, the gross disparity between his previous sentences goes to the issue of deterrence as well. 57 months is about 28 and a half times longer than any sentence he'd previously been given before. One district court in New York found that in Hernandez, a sentence of 8 times longer than defendant's previous high sentence was a sufficient level of deterrence. In another case, the same court found that a sentence of 10 times longer was a sufficient level of deterrence. And in another district, Eastern District of Wisconsin, the court found that if a defendant's prior sentences were for months or days, a federal sentence of a few years would likely provide a significant deterrence to future crime. In this case, trial counsel recommended a sentence of 36 months. That would still have been 18 times longer than his previous high sentence. Therefore, the 57-month sentence Mr. Anderlich actually received was unreasonable. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Mr. Vajroy?
Good morning. I'm John Vodry from the U.S. Attorney's Office up in Madison. In my time, I just want to say there's two straightforward questions here, and I think both of them just warrant the court saying something, and I'll explain why. First is whether the Mikitek rebuttable presumption actually equals some sort of mandatory per se reasonableness. You said in Mikitek that it didn't. I think the answer is clearly no, that when you say rebuttable presumption, that doesn't mean mandatory. I do think it is an opportunity to say so once again. I would only point out that at least in several of my pending cases, this is being the same contention is being raised before the district court, and I look to be able to go home and say that we're going to have another decision at some point. So the same thing is sort of piling up. Second, and really addressing the arguments today, the issue really is it your job to sort out between several sentences, all possibly reasonable? As I said in the brief, 36 months probably is a reasonable sentence. I don't know that we would have appealed or made a whole lot of foo-foo about it, but I don't think that is the issue. Right? And the fact of the matter is you review what Judge Shabazz did and you just decide if that's reasonable. Essentially, the argument about this multiplier from your prior record is dangerous is probably a little strong, but this series of cases out of my home county, Sawyer County, presents exactly the problem that would be displayed. Sawyer County, for various reasons, one judge county, historically have given a lot of short sentences, and that's just fine. That's the judge's decision. And what happened in this long series of cases off the Lacoudre Reservation is a lot of folks like Mr. Anderlich, who had relatively short sentences for all these things, and his wasn't very serious. Some of the others had some serious conduct that just didn't get much of a response. And I just have to believe that it is the district courts within their discretion to go, essentially, enough is enough. You're the guy who hasn't gotten the message, and I'm not going to give you another 60-month or another 20 months. Now we're going to give you a longer sentence.
Is there any real support for the theory of progressive discipline in the criminal justice context anyway?
Not factually or legally, I don't think. I just
or as a matter of criminal justice policy.
Right, I don't.
Corrections policy.
I am what I am. I'm probably not an expert in criminal justice policy, but in what I do know, I would have to say no.
I mean, we have a lot of first-time offenders who get very lengthy sentences because of the severity of the offense.
Right. One that is pending before this court out of the same series of cases, a woman named Candace Rademacher had zero criminal history points, and she was one of the heads of the Latin Kings on the reservation, and she's got a 30-year sentence. It's a very sad thing, but she started at the big time, as I told her many times. You didn't start with the little crimes. And Mr. Anderlich presents that problem. He does have drug problems. He is only 43, which is seeming younger every day. But the fact of the matter is Judge Shabazz got all those arguments. There's no contention he didn't consider them. He did consider them, and he just thought, as I said, enough is enough. It's time to go forward. So I would ask that the judgment be affirmed. And to the extent you feel that you want to publish and talk about it, I'd like that affirmance so we can take it home. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Boudreaux. And Mr. Anderson, how much time does he have?
8 minutes.
8 minutes. Okay.
You talked really fast.
3 minutes. 3 minutes. I only had five altogether, so. Okay. 3 minutes.
You must like Mr. Anderson a lot.
Your Honors, just briefly, with respect to Mike Itiek, acknowledging it's probably unlikely that this panel's going to change much, but the presumption of reasonableness, as it's been expressed by this court, does seem to be saying that it's the same as it was before Booker. There's these narrow standards that allow for a departure, but other than that, you've got to apply the guidelines. That may not be what the court's intended to say, but that does seem to be what it has said. I would suggest the court should actually say there's not a presumption one way or the other. The burden is simply on the appealing party that has appealed to show that it's unreasonable, just as with any other issue on appeal. Well, I mean, the unreasonable standard is unique.
That's a narrow scope of review, right?
Sorry, what?
It's a narrow scope of review, reasonableness. And if the sentence is within the guidelines, and, you know, we think the Sentencing Commission is a responsible body, sentences in the guidelines are usually reasonable. They have to have unusual situation to require us to reverse a guideline sentence. That's all McKutick, I think, stands for.
Except that Booker has now allowed consideration of the individual. The guidelines, for the most part.
But just realistically, if Sentencing Commission thinks about all these things and establishes a range, and the judge sentences within that range, presumably it'll be an unusual case where the guideline sentence is unreasonable. There'll be some cases, but just be unusual. That's all the court, I think, meant by establishing a presumption.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Anderson.